And we are back once again, the Parish of the Patriots, 175th installment. Glad you joined us this week. Always looking forward to these discussions. I'm always, we're always excited to get together, as it were, even virtually get together here for the show. It always hit me, you know, to be like, oh, well, you're Parish of the Patriots. It's just on the internet. But then when they had the whole lockdowns, it's like, well, yeah. You know, all this stuff is on the internet now. Now, does it not count? Well, it does count because we do have a fun discussion. If you're new around these parts, we do have a Christian-specific message. That's roughly the halfway point of the show, more or less. Encourage you to stick around for it. It is geared specifically for those who are Christian believers. But if you're a non-believer, you're welcome to stick around. It's your choice. As always, like to start the show off reminding everybody, don't be shy, pay those dyes. It is appreciated. We don't have anything behind paywalls. There's no subscription things. It's just what you see is what you get. We got snail mail. I've got snail mail. Doesn't get any easier than the snail mail. Got Bitcoin, got Monero, got the email address down there. Just scroll to the bottom of the description page and you'll find that there. And I wanted to make a note here because I've had several instances where people got confused and I didn't understand why. And then I went and actually looked and paid attention for a change. And I realized why the confusion. When I say scroll to the bottom of the description page, go down where you see the P.O. box. You know, right below that is my Bitcoin and Monero addresses and my email. Because if you happen to fast scroll to the bottom of the page, the addresses down there are actually to where you donate to Radio Albion itself, which is fine. I'm not telling you not to do that. But I have had a couple times where people got confused. They're like, I sent you some Bitcoin shekels. And you're saying you didn't get them. Where did they go? And it wound up, they went all the way to the bottom. And they sent them to Radio Albion. So anyway, just to clear that up. But with that having been said, we got a lot to talk about, no doubt. And we've got to go through the listener supporter mailbag real quick. GPD from Mr. T, weekly supporter here. Some dough for the show. Very much appreciated. I need all the help I can get. It's rough. It's rough out here. We're all getting hit with the inflations. Everything going up. It's crazy. Still trying to make it. All of us. Dear Grandpa Dan, love the shows. Agree with you. The SJWs are doing what they are told, just like BLM and Antifa. Really funny. They have no actual thought process. Keep up the good work. I pray for you daily. And that's from Debbie. And it is really appreciated, both the financial support, the prayers, because believe me, all the prayers I can get. Gramps, blessings to you on this June 19th of the Feast of the External Solemnity of Corpus Christi, and a happy Father's Day as well. Here are some tithings to help things along. The bad news is Bitcoin value, like pretty much all money, is declining in value. The good news is I can now buy more of it with my equally worthless bucks and send it to somewhere it can do some good. Take care, prayers for you and the congregation, and love. No homo, of course. And that's from Jay. Yes, it is very much. It's funny because, you know, you look at it and it's like you have less money, but like if you buy in Bitcoin right now, it's like this bigger amount of Bitcoin. Jess says, appreciate it. It does make a difference. It is doing some good. Loyally appreciated. So yeah, you know, as we wander off into our discussion, I finally went to my appointment with the urologist. The show will be more interesting this, but it's, I have to tell a story because I think it's funny. As funny as going to the doctor over, you know, possible kidney cancer can be, I think this story is funny. So I finally got my appointment with the urologist, man, and I go to the urologist. And you know, long story short of how the appointment went, I was told, well, you know, the scan where they found this doesn't really tell them that much. So I had to go, I got scheduled and I had to go get a different type of CT scan. And I'll hear about that, what it says, and whether or not they're going to wind up cutting a chunk out of my kidney. Good stuff. But it was funny because, you know, like any doctor's office, you go in there and they leave you in the room. You know what I'm talking about? They always take you in there. They dump you in the room. It's like, they're conditioning you, you know, and you're stuck in this room and, you know, for a little bit waiting for the doctor to show up. It's probably funny if they had hidden cameras in there. They may do. You wonder if they have hidden cameras in these doctors. I'll just see what patients do when they're just put in the box. Let's observe the patients, what they do. So they stick me in the room. I'm waiting for the doctor. And, you know, look, I'm wandering around. I'm look. You know what I'm talking about. You go to the doctor and they stick you in the room and you wander around. And you look. You see their stupid, you know, posters and the promotional materials they have from the pharmaceutical companies and all the rest of it. You observe the things. You observe your surroundings in the room because you're bored. There's nothing else you can do. I can't sit around and just stare at my phone. I'm just looking around at things. Now, when you're a man my age and you go to the doctor, especially you go to the urologist, you're thinking about one thing. You know, I mean. You're thinking about one thing, and I'm thinking, I did not come in here for that. I didn't come up in here for that. I come in here to go over whether or not we doing some kind of kidney cancer thing, you know. And I'm looking at the things with this in my mind. I'm looking at things in the room, you know, and I'm looking. And they have an anatomical model set up here, you know, like a breakaway, you know, like a cutaway so that they can show you the different parts of your body. And it's for your prostate, of course, because this is what these people wind up, you know, this is what they specialize in. And they have this cutaway of the prostate. And I thought to myself, this is how bad things are. I thought to myself, how lucky I am, because the anatomical model was fairly average and white. I thought to myself, you know, with this society and this, you know, you can't turn on anything or do anything without this black or, you know, this diversity or whatever. And I was kind of half surprised they didn't make like the anatomical model like five times bigger than like normal size and black, you know, just so you can remember how inferior you are. You know, it's this giant black. No, they didn't do that. It was just like normal. So I was impressed. Take the little wins where you can get them, you know, wander around the office. I'm surprised with, you know, this Pride Month, you know, the cutaway didn't have like arrows pointing to the prostate up the anus and be like, this is your pleasure center. Keeping it family friendly here, folks. Keeping it family friendly. I'm bored in the office. I'm sitting around, looking around, look up on the wall, and they have those, you know, they put their rubber gloves that are disposable up there. You know, and there's only two boxes up there. One's small, one's extra large. I'm thinking, if push comes to shove, I hope he's the guy using the small gloves and nothing. It didn't come up in there for that. I'm going to tell him I didn't come up in there for that. I didn't come up for all that. You can just pass with all that. And to top it all off, I look over and it's like, oh man, they're still doing all this COVID stuff. There's a big old pump jug of hand sanitizer sitting over there on the counter. And then I look a little closer and it's like, no, it's like KY jelly lube. So that just sealed the deal. That just sealed the deal. I'm on my guard when he come up in there. I was ready to tell him, I can come up here for all that. We ain't doing all that. You just tell me if I'm going to die of the kidney cancer. Anyway, didn't have to worry about all this. Just went over the results like I'd planned. Of course, the huge news this week has been the Roe versus Wade thing. Roe versus Wade, boy, we're having a meltdown. And so much, it's just more and more ridiculousness. More and more ridiculous. I get so tired of the lies. So tired of the absurdity. I saw, and they're going out and they'll interview anybody who, of course, is, you know, doing the designated outrage over this. They run out and find anybody, and it just gets stupid. It just gets absurd. It's like a ritual. These people are so upset. You would have thought the Supreme Court reversed course and said, well, the federal government now has to ban abortion. They just kicked it back to the states. We'll get into that here in just a minute. But watching these people, you know, and they're in places like California and New York that nothing's going to change for them. And they're just out there just acting, they're just crazy. You know, literally, it's a ritual. I saw there was a picture floating around on the internet. Some woman got a tattoo on her abdomen of a baby being murdered. Tell me these people aren't sick. Tell me there's something wrong with them. Absurd. They're running out. And they'll interview any kind of quasi-celebrity to get their view, but as long as it's the correct view of moral outrage over not being able to sacrifice your children to Moloch. And one of the stories, I read an entire article, though. I don't know why I read it, except that by the end of it, I thought it was really funny. Because they run out, and I can't even remember her name right, that really annoying lesbian on the women's, you know, the U.S. women's soccer team, whatever her name is. Y'all know who I'm talking about. Really? No. And they went and asked her. And she did this long impromptu speech that lasted, a statement a long impromptu statement at some meeting somewhere about this abortion thing. And they did this whole story on this woman going on about this outrage to women's rights and how this just enslaves women, blah, 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 all the same, you know, approved narrative crap. And I was thinking how absurd this is. This lesbian is going on. I mean, you know, because they tell us, they say, you men should have no say in this. Even though it affects society as a whole, you men should have no say in this because you can't get pregnant in the first place. You have no place. You have no place. We might let you speak up from the sidelines, but understand your place, man. You can't get pregnant, so you don't understand. Well, then she shouldn't have, with that logic, she shouldn't be saying nothing either, right? How does pregnancy have anything to do with her? She's a genetic dead end. And I was thinking about how stupid this was. This story about how she is so personally outraged over the idea that a woman can get pregnant and not be able to sacrifice her infant to Moloch. And I was thinking, you know, what does she think? What are we supposed to think is going to happen? Like, she going to turn up pregnant? Look, folks, it takes a certain amount of skill to keep this show family friendly. And I got it. We can do this thing. Like, she's going to get pregnant. You know, how's she going to get pregnant? From a piece of plastic. I mean, she's going to go to the doctor and be like, doctor, I think I may be pregnant. And he like does a sonogram and he's like, oh my goodness. She's like, what is it? He's like, you're carrying Mr. Potato Head. You're giving birth to an empty 2-liter Pepsi bottle. You're impregnated by your piece of plastic that you use in your lesbian activities. The abortion clinic for the lesbians, it just looks like those, you know, it looks like those pictures you see, like with a bunch of plastic, empty plastic pollution bottles wash up on a beach somewhere. And she looks down there and the abortion doctor, he looks like, you got to be old to get this reference. He looks like the crying Indian, you know, from the pollution commercials in the 70s. She's down there getting her plastic Pepsi bottles aborted, you know, because she got pregnant with a piece of plastic. And she looks down there and it's the crying Indian with a tear running down his eye because he's like, all this pollution. All these lesbians having to abort their plastic babies. It's an outrage. Outrage. All these people, they go around so they can mimic the current outrage. And of course, you know, the protests erupted immediately. Do any of these people have permits? I suppose they do. They're all out there with their pre-printed signs with the narrative slogan already ready to go. These people had to be transported in. There had to be logistics involved. Organized. Somebody told them where to go, at what time, where to park their cars, where to get on the bus, how to arrive. And of course, we never hear that. We're supposed to just look at this as a thousand showed up to protest. Who organized that? Who paid for that? Who got the permit? When was the permit issued? That might be interesting. Was the permit issued? Because if the permit was issued like 3 months ago, the entire thing's a farce, isn't it? I can't picture like same day permit processing. We're having a protest tomorrow after this Supreme Court stamp, go ahead. Maybe that's what happens. Of course, we had a free press. They would actually look into that. We might get some answers to that because I want to know. But of course, we don't have a free press in the U.S. Oh, it's just crazy. You got all these ugly people, you know? And that's one of the funny things I saw, something out there on, I don't know, Twitter or whatever, you know. And I'm sorry, it is always the absolute ugliest bitches. And they always like, okay, men, you better be ready because now we on protest. Now we on strike. We ain't giving it up. Oh, no, not that. Some big ugly woman with tattoos all over. And she's like, no more sex for any of you men. Except Chad, of course. Yeah, I mean, it's all so stupid. This pseudo outrage. It's the approved narrative outrage. See, there's nothing wrong with being outraged as long as it rolls along with the narrative. You got people standing out there on social media. You got people out there IRL protesting, threatening to burn buildings down, saying, burn it down, demanding, burn it down. You got people on social media saying they need to kill these Supreme Court justices. Where's the investigation? They're not even getting banned. We know how it goes for nationalists. I mean, it's not really a matter of whining about it, but it is important to point out yet for the 6 millionth time that they don't actually have any principles. This is just about promoting the agenda, promoting the narrative. If you're counter the narrative, you're going to get cracked down on. If you're going along with the narrative, it pretty much doesn't matter what you say, who you threaten, how much violence you incite, you know, it doesn't matter. What matters is, are you promoting the narrative or are you countering the narrative, the approved narrative? That's all it is. That's all it is. You think about, I thought it was ridiculous. It was ridiculous enough when they had these massive violent protests, mostly peaceful, fiery, violent protests. You know, because George Floyd died of a drug overdose while in police custody. And they wound up convicting that cop for looking like a real asshole with his knee on the guy's back. They convicted him for murder because the guy died of a drug overdose. I thought that was ridiculous enough. But now, like I say, you got these people having these massive protests about this abortion thing in places like New York City where absolutely nothing is going to change. Nothing is going to change. It's like you live in New York. You live in California. You live in Washington State. Nothing is changing on your abortion. Don't worry. You can keep firing up the idol. You can keep, you know, you can keep chopping up your babies for Moloch, selling their organs. You just don't worry. Nobody's stopping you. But they want it everywhere. I saw a statement the other day, and this just really highlights. I see these things, you know, and it's not playing this. See, they're the real racists, or see, they don't. It's just. The truth is the truth. And when you see these things and how they just go against their own thing. I saw some woman virtue signaling. I read a deal. I think it was an article or something. They were interviewing some woman and she was virtue signaling over this, of course, because every woman has to be proud to butcher their babies. And so why not? These back in the old days, you know, when they sacrificed their infants to Moloch, they thought that it would bring about economic prosperity. What do they say now? If women aren't allowed to sacrifice their babies, they won't have economic prosperity. This woman was saying how this is awful. And this is a white woman, of course. And she's saying this is awful. This is awful because it's going to affect women of color. And she's so outraged, she's going to donate and help support any kind of group, or she was starting a group, I don't remember, that would work to be sure that as many immigrant women as possible could get abortions. So you're working actively to make sure as many brown and black babies as you can get aborted. Slow clap. Will that person be accused of being racist? No, because it goes along with the narrative. But it's just funny. It's just funny. That is so funny to me, to sit there with a straight face and proudly virtue signaling and saying, I'm going to make sure as many brown people that come across the border get their babies murdered. I'm going to go out and fund groups that will help them murder their babies because it's got to happen. It's just too many of them. Wow. It goes back to the fact that we had one of the listeners from the mailbag point out from one of our previous shows, these people don't believe in any of this stuff. I always have to remember that because people do. They get caught up and it's like, ha, they're hypocrites. No, they're not, because they don't actually believe in any of this. They just, whatever they're told is what they're supposed to believe and go along with and support. That's what they do. That's what these virtue signals are. If the narrative came out today and said the righteous, virtuous thing to do is to lynch black people and hang them, these SJWs, these anti-racists, would be out there chasing black people around, demanding the government lynch them. They don't believe any of the things they say they believe in. They just get off on going along with the authority, because when they see the authority crack down on people that don't go along with it, it makes them feel powerful. They feel like they took part in it. You know, it's like a sports ball mentality. You know, you hear people like after the game, you know, when they're wearing their jersey for their favorite team, it's like, yeah, we just couldn't do it yesterday. We tried. We just couldn't break through their defense. It's like they're taking part in it. But see, they get off on it. That's why they paint on their face and cheer and yell and spit half their year's income on season tickets because my team needs me. My team, they get this false sense of taking part that they contribute. When their team wins, they feel like they were a part of the team winning. You see, these people are like that. It's not that they believe any of this. It's just that they're so... They get off on feeling like they have power. When they go along with the narrative as it's given, it's not on principle. It's because when they turn around and watch the government crack down on those who don't go along, they get off on it because they feel like they are powerful. Because it's like they took part in making sure these people who didn't agree with them, who didn't say the same thing they did, got punished. That's all it is. But it is. It's crazy. These people in these pro-abortion states where nothing's changing are having violent protests. Why? Why? I think this is a positive. This is a net positive. It really is. Everything set aside, you got all these different little fringe arguments, you know, about this, and way, you know, demographics and how it could affect demographics. You're missing the point by throwing this back to the states. Because, see, I had somebody write to me recently, once again, asking me, I'm like, no, the way I see this playing out is this country, the U.S., is going to, at some point on some level, break off into separate little smaller entities. You look at this fragmented, polarized, divided society, and it's getting worse and worse. You look at these, you've got normal people, and then you've got these lunatics out there screeching and with paint splattered all over their crotches and demanding to be able to murder babies. You know, how are you going to get along? How are you going to bring these two groups together? Now, of course, the government sits there and, you know, they work to really accentuate these differences. They stoke the fire continuously. You know, they say, you know, they want this society, this multicultural. You got these different beliefs, and we come together as our democracy and our values and whatnot. But I mean, things are getting worse. Race relations are worse than they've probably ever been. Social cohesion is worse than it's ever been. Relations between men and women are worse than they've ever been. And you've got this societal divide. And the divide is primarily not even by race. Race is just one of the aspects they hype up. But you've got the societal divide between normal people and these lunatics. Oh, straight up. You got normal people and these crazy people, these absurd lunatics. And there's the divide. Now, like I say, by throwing this back to the states, you can have states that already they already had laws on the place that when this got kicked out at some point in time, it would kick in and basically make abortion illegal. But like I say, nothing's changing in New York. Nothing's changing in Washington State. Nothing's changing in California. Anything that encourages people to like separate, like if you live in one of those places and you're like, man, I don't want to be, you know, say like from a Christian perspective, you know, come up out of them, you know, but where do we go? Well, this provides an opportunity to come up out from among them and not be a part of them. You know, if you don't want to be a part of, infant sacrifice to Moloch, then you can go live, you know, you got the option to at least go to a state to where they don't allow that. And maybe it encourages, you get any people whining, like, you know, being able to take a trip doesn't exist. I got to be able to get my abortion. Go move to Washington State. Go move to New York City. Go move to California. Go, go, go. You come up out of us, and we'll come up out of you. This fragments the country further and helps set things up for some form of secession, which this country is going to eventually break up into smaller deals. And anything that kind of encourages people to go ahead and get separated beforehand is going to make things easier down the road. Let the pro-abortion lunatics that demand the right to murder people's kids, and they want to fund money to make sure other people get their kids murdered too. make sure and fund all that. Well, make sure and fund all that. Let them go to their separate areas. We can all separate. It'll help make things easier down the road. Basically, where were these people? Where were these people? COVID lockdowns? Nope. Nope. You know, we said the story of during the COVID thing, you know, when they wouldn't, like, people's grandparents were like on their deathbed and they wouldn't allow them to go in and see them. You know, you're not allowed because of the COVID. Now, I'm just saying, you know, if that's me, you know, somebody standing there in the white coat saying, no, you're not allowed to do that. They're going to have to bring a little more than that. But anyway, Yeah, these people were fine with that. They were fine standing back and saying, well, I look at Grandma through the window. Goodbye, Grandma. Can you hear me? Goodbye. They weren't outraged about any of that. But the idea that somebody that lives in another state might not be murdering their baby buddy, that's a bridge too far. That's a bridge too far. No, no. I don't believe any of that stuff. It's just whatever the narrative tells them, because they get off on the feeling of shared power. Anyway, hey, good news. We are finally wrapping up Rainbow Month. Thank goodness. Can you imagine a society that spends the entire month has redefined pride? Has redefined pride as to, you know, that took me a moment. Keep it family friendly, you know, sticking your various appendages into somebody's butt. That is pride now. This is surely a sustainable society. Thank goodness the so-called Pride Month is finally wrapping up. Maybe we can move on for another year. Of course, I don't know. I mean, they push this nonstop anyway, you know. But yeah, finally we're wrapping this up. Thank goodness. All the corporations. That was another thing, you know, because you get all the corporations there. You run around and promote the narrative too, you know, of course, with the rainbow nonsense and all of the, you know, pro-anal fisting, because it's what pride is, and we show this is how we come together as a country with more anal fisting. And it's the same thing. You know, you had all of these sports organizations and corporations come out, you know, and issue their stern statements about how outraged they too are over this Roe versus Wade decision. You know, they're just, yeah. Again, like the WNBA. Yes, I talked about this recently. What a joke it is, as you know, because no one cares about women's quote unquote professional basketball. I mean, nobody cares about that. I think last week, by the way, I forgot to mention at the beginning of the show, last week we did do another roundtable with Sven and Dr. Johnson and myself. If you didn't catch that, be sure and go back and catch that. It was a fun show. It's always fun when we have those discussions. But I was pointing out that I didn't know women, you know, you have all these professional women's sports, like the WNBA. If they ever show news clips, whenever they show sports clips from a WNBA game, you know, and they always, you will notice, they always have the stands, the lights are turned off in the stands so that the camera doesn't pick up that there's nobody there because nobody cares. But anyway, I saw like the WNBA, the Women's National Basketball Association, issued a stern statement about how bad and upset they are over this Roe versus Wade thing, you know. And again, though, it's like 90% of these quote unquote professional women basketball players, you know, they're all lesbians. There was a story years ago. And there was a player in one of these deals, and she retired. She quit. She couldn't take it. She said she was like normal, straight, and married, you know, with kids or whatever. And she said she couldn't take it because the harassment, because like everyone else on the team were lesbos, and she just couldn't take it as a normal Christian person. She's like, I can't do this anymore. Can't deal with it. But you got this organization that represents a whole bunch of lesbians going on about the, you know, the abortion. Again, but Mr. Potato Head, you know, you can abort Mr. Potato Head anytime you want. You want a boy, you want a girl, just change it. Just put a different hat. You can have a Mrs. Potato Head. You can. Stupid. All these corporations now, they're running around getting on the virtue signal. You know, the virtue signal. It's all of it's just a show. It's all just theater. You get these people. You know, the corporations out there virtue signaling how they, oh, yes, we're outraged because we're supposed to be outraged. And what always chaps my hide is they act like, you know, this is some brave. And that's what they, you know, we're taking this brave and stunning stance. What's your brave stance? We're bravely standing up with the official approved narrative. How brave. How very brave of you to stand up and go along with what's officially promoted is what you're supposed to go along with, whether it's Rainbow Flag Month, anal fisting, and the celebration of sacrificing your infants to Moloch in the name of economic prosperity. You bravely go along with those things. How very stunning. How very brave. No, what's brave is to stand up for the truth and say, yeah, I'm not doing any of that. We're not going along with all of that. But you see, those are the people that are persecuted, shut down, harassed. Got to lose your job. Got to be threatened. Got to be shut down, banned, whatnot. No, the ones who are stunning and brave are the ones who go along and promote the narrative. all these sick orphans. This country is so, this country is so just terminally ill. It really is. It's just terminally ill. People say, well, hey, are you sure? Why do you think this whole thing's going to come apart? And it's like, just look at the last 5 to 10 years and tell me, is this pathway, you know, sustainable in any sense of the term? Somebody was telling me something about they read something. I don't even remember what it was, but it was like, you know, by 2030, and I'm thinking, sitting here kind of snickering, like, that's 8 years from now. This shit show ain't going to still be in one piece in 8 years. I don't see it. I don't see it. 8, 10 years from now, if we keep on the path we're on at this rate, do you really see this thing holding together that long? Never mind the backdrop of they're continuing to work on getting a war started that they have no way to win. There's no way forget military, forget that. You cannot fight and win a war with a society at home that is this divided, this polarized, doesn't produce anything. There's no manufacturing capability. And like I say, the society as a whole is trying to rip itself apart, but you're going to go start a two-front war with Russia and China. Yeah, that's totally going to happen. It's totally going to work out great. It's crazy, crazy days we live in. But you know, we got to just keep on going. And speaking of keeping on going, we got to get into the Christian specific segment for this week. I know you've been looking forward to it. You don't want to miss it. Trust me. So yeah, as I say every week, you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon, this week's Christian specific discussion here at the Parish of the Patriots. So for our Christian-specific segment this week, we're going to be taking a look at Daniel chapter 3. We're going to be discussing the events of Daniel chapter 3. Now, obviously, since we're talking about the entire chapter, we're not going to sit here and read this week, but that's what we're going over. I encourage you to take your own time and read chapter. It's not, you know, excessively long, but it is too long to sit here and read the entire thing. And, of course, what we're going to be discussing is this is the telling of the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego being thrown into the fiery furnace. It's a story you're probably fairly familiar with. But again, I do encourage you to go back and read it because you know, you get details. And as we discuss it, maybe you can reread it, get a little more meaning out of it. I don't know. And I have to say, I have a hard time with the names. So I'm probably going to wind up misspeaking it at some point. Don't laugh. Because I'm always reminded, and I always have these stories, and one thing I've learned over the years when I relay these stories, you know, in my personal life, I have to say, tell them in a way to where, you know, it's not tied back to anyone in particular, because that's how it is. That's how it is here in Clown World. But many years ago, many years ago, I worked with two other guys. We worked on a shift together. There were three of us on a shift, and we had true diversity. There was me, the one white guy, the next guy who was Hispanic, he was a Mexican. And then the third guy was a black guy. And we all got along quite well. And I always laugh because whenever I read this story and you know, try to spit these names out, because whenever we'd have trouble from the higher ups, you know, we'd have friction or something would get dumped on us or they'd try to blame us for something. The black guy used to always say, he'd say, man, we're like Shadrach, Meshach, and the big Negro. I just always remember that story every time I go over this. And it's going to be hard for me to go over this story and not throw the big Negro in there. So, salute. I still remember these things from so many years ago. And unlike these rabid, self-proclaimed anti-racist people, you know, I've actually worked with and been friends with people of other races. Most of them probably haven't. They live in their little upper middle class. Well, you know the drill. So in Daniel chapter 3, our three compadres there, it culminates in the story of them being thrown in the fiery furnace. You know about that part. But I thought it would be interesting because this serves as an example. You see, these three guys were living in a land not their own. Something we have to get into our head. I hear people talk about, you know, America, this is my country, by golly, and I ain't backing down from it. But it's not your country. It's hard to accept the truth. You know, it would have looked ridiculous if Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had been going around going, Babylon is our country. We're running this thing and we're not backing down a bit. Well, no, obviously not. They were exiles living in another land under a foreign king. Americans, and not just Americans, but people living in the West, white people living in the West. You get it in your head. These aren't your countries anymore. There's people talking about it'll no longer, you know, Britain will no longer be British, but it's not already. I mean, more specifically, not just as white people, but as Christian believers, we have to have it in our head that we are living as exiles. Because we're living in a truly wicked and godless society. If you're in the West, you are living in a wicked, godless society. Now, you know, of course, we know in the Bible it talks about, you know, come up out of them. You know, don't be a part of them. And I thought it was interesting because when you read this story, these three guys were living. It serves as an example. That's why I thought we'd talk about this today. Because these guys serve as an example of how to conduct yourself when you're living as exiles under a foreign, basically under a, you know, under a foreign regime, under a nation that is in a nation, I guess that's what I'm trying to spit out. I'll get it here in a minute. In a nation that is not your own. Again, people sit there and say, well, it's America. What do you mean it's not my nation? We got to fight for our nation. We've lost. I mean, our politicians don't represent us. There was a story just this morning as I was recording, because I flipped through the news real quick just to be sure there hadn't been some huge happening right before I record the show that I don't mention. And some white woman politician who was backed by Trump, she won her election. And of course, you know, this whole Roe versus Wade thing. And she made the statement that this is a great victory for white life. And of course, the media had a huge meltdown over this because she said it was great for white life. She, of course, came back and backtracked. Man, I meant to say right to life. But what is wrong with white life? I mean, what is that? Just by saying this is a great thing for white life, why would that be? Why is that a huge negative that you got to go back and correct? That would be a really relief if when something like that happened, these people came back and said, yeah, well, yeah, I mean, I do. I think it's a great thing for white life. Doesn't mean it has to be detrimental to other people's lives. This is just another example. It's like when they went around, you know, melting down over people putting out flyers that said white lives matter. They show their true colors, that they are, you know, this is what these people push is a anti-white race hating agenda. It's not about lifting other people up. That's just the excuse. Again, when you point out and you say something like this woman, she says this is a great victory for white life. Why should that be a thing? So, I mean, they're saying that's a horrible thing. She should apologize and whatnot. But it's essentially what then? They're saying that the opposite is true, that we need white death, that white death is what they're after. I mean, you have to take them at their words. I mean, why is that offensive? These aren't our countries. These aren't our countries. I mean, we look at, you know, and people sit there and say, what do you mean all these politicians are white people? Well, setting aside the ones that are, hello, my fellow white people, I mean, yeah, you have these white people politicians. But I mean, I was thinking, again, this relates, this is why the Old Testament teaches us a lot. And it's a shame that it's so downplayed and ignored in the church today. You know, when one of these kings would come in and subjugate another nation, they would come in with their army, subjugate the nation, loot the place. Well, I mean, they didn't take everybody back home with them. I mean, they would make it a client state. And most often what they would do is they would take somebody, they would kidnap the royalty that had been in charge. They would take them back to their own country. But then they would pick somebody, either a distant relative of those of the people running the country, or they'd just pick somebody else at random. But they would pick somebody, though, who was of that nation, who was of that race of people. And they would put them in charge so that at least when the people looked and said, well, who's our ruler? Well, you know, they had somebody that was of their own people. Of course, never mind. He was a puppet king and he was just taking orders from the king who had subjugated them. This is very reflective of our nations today. Yes, there are white politicians, but do they represent you? Can you picture Mitch McConnell going up and saying, this is a great victory for white life? Oh, my gosh, no. Not in 100 years. They're just simply puppet figures put in place. But at the end of the day, they're not answering to us. I mean, they're not going to stand up and say anything that, you know, white lives matter or anything like that. So, yeah, you have to come from the starting point, the standpoint of understanding that we as white Christian believers I mean, we are living under, we are living in exile. We are living among a nation that's not our own. And again, that's a hard thing to swallow, but it is what it is, as I always say. And you got to accept that reality. As Christian people in general, and as, you know, but specifically as Christian white people in particular, we are living, you know, among, you know, we're living in a nation. We're basically like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We're living, you know, as foreigners among these people. Among, you know, because we look at these people who, just look at the protesting people over this Roe v. Wade thing. I mean, they're like demonic possessed. I mean, we're living among, we're living in the crazy. We're exiles in clown world. So you got your three guys here, and you know they're living among. Now they're not going around stirring up trouble. They're not going around constantly undermining and being hostile. In fact, actually, they're holding positions of somewhat authority under King Nebuchadnezzar. They've actually, because they've proven themselves. Because as bad as Nebuchadnezzar was, I mean, it was still more or less a meritocracy. And these guys had proven themselves to being very competent, very worthwhile. And they were putting in certain positions of authority in the government to oversee things. And they were doing a good job. They weren't going around undermining. They weren't going around stabbing people in the back. They weren't going around constantly causing trouble. They were doing their jobs. But they were also holding to their principles. Now, Nebuchadnezzar, one of the things you really get to understand sometimes, I always, or at least to me, it dawns on me when you read about these old kings. And King Saul, he in particular strikes me with this, is a lot of these old kings were kind of nuts. You know, really, they got kind of nuts. Saul, like I say, Saul was a really good example of, you know, you read about King Saul and his actions and how they were all over the place. You know, one minute he just loved David and thought he was the greatest guy in the world. And then he'd jump up from the table and try to run a spear through him. He was just nuts. He was just absolutely nuts. Anyway, Nebuchadnezzar was much the same way. And you know, so Nebuchadnezzar, he sets up this, he builds a golden idol. He builds this image of gold. And he comes up with this ludicrous demand that anytime anybody hears any kind of music, they've all got to turn to the direction of where he set up this idol, and everybody's got to bow down and worship it. Anytime you hear any music, that's just stupid. It's just like a Simon Says or like a musical chairs thing, isn't it? It's like you're walking along, and then all of a sudden you hear somebody playing a flute or beating on a tambourine. Everybody's got to stop, freeze, turn, bow down, and worship the golden image. It was just like it was ludicrous. I think he's outrageous on purpose. Yeah, I think of the mask wearing rituals that we've been recently put through and all the rest of it with the COVID nonsense. We talked about many times about how things they demand, a lot of this stuff they demand that you go on with is intentionally absurd because it's about making you submit. You know, it's, you know, you look at it and it's like, well, they're making these demands, they're telling you to do these things, and it's obviously a lie and it's a stupid lie. And yet they're demanding everybody go along with it. But it's like, no, the point isn't to fool you. The point is for it to be an obvious lie in your face in the first place, because it takes more, you know, it means a more thorough submission for you to go along with it. If you go along with something that's just stupid and ludicrous on its face, you see the pattern. Like I said, we talked about this over the last several years, you know, at just to no end. It's kind of the same tactic here with Nebuchadnezzar. He knew it was stupid. Of course it was stupid. The whole point was to make sure everybody was submitting. He come up with something. He knew what did he build this image out of gold and think, oh wow, you know, I really just created a god. Well, no, he didn't think that. It was, the whole point was, you know, adding the whole thing, you know, he could have said that, you know, every day at 2 o'clock, you've got to turn towards this image. But see, that wouldn't be absurd enough. Because you know, to make it to where anytime you heard music, you've got to stop, turn, and bow down to this image. It's supposed to be stupid. It's supposed to be absurd because it takes more submission. the lie. Again, like I said, we've said this so many times over the past several years. The lie has got to be in your face, because then it takes actual submission. If it's believable, you have kind of like an account, a credible deniability, you know, where you can say, well, I didn't know. But when it's an absurd lie, then yeah, you know, you're just going along with it. So he made this rule. Anytime you hear this music, everybody's got to stop what they're doing, turn and bow towards the direction of where this image was set up. And our three boys here were like, yeah, we're not doing that. Now, again, these guys were really competent in their job. They weren't going around causing trouble. They were competent. They'd been promoted because they were doing their job. They were going along as far as, you know, doing their work. But they weren't abandoning. That didn't mean they were abandoning their beliefs. That doesn't mean they were abandoning their principles. When Nebuchadnezzar came up with this decree, they were like, I mean, they make a big stink. They can go out there and scream in the streets and protest. They just quietly said, yeah, we ain't doing that. And they didn't. Well, of course, you know, you've got people that are jealous. Like I said, these guys are in authority. These guys hold some position of prestige in the government, and they're doing a good job, and they're admired. So, of course, you got backstabbers. You got these backstabbers. They go run to Nebuchadnezzar, and they go, you know, your decree you made about everybody's got to bow down to that. And he's like, yeah. He's like, those three guys ain't doing it. What? Yeah, those three guys, man, they're not doing it. Of course, I'm sure this was brought about because they wanted the people who brought this up are wanting those positions themselves. Also worth noting is those who refuse this again will rhyme to you as far as looking at our circumstances in this country over the past several years. Those who do submit, bow down to the ridiculous lie and go along with it, always resent those who stand on principle and say, no, we're not doing that. Those who are cowards and will go along with whatever they're told, they have no principles, they will always hate and undermine and want to see people who don't do that be cut down. Because every time they look at those people, they're reminded of how cowardly they are, that they can't do that. You may think, you know, you're not a brave person, and that's all fine and well and good. But if you've refused to go along with the obvious lie, you've made a brave stand that a whole lot of people refuse to make, and they hate you for it. They hate you for it because you refuse to go along. You're making a big scene of it. You've got to make a big show of it. Don't make an ass out of yourself. They were just like, yeah, no, we're not doing that. We're just going about our business. They protest in the street or refuse to do their job. They just went about their business, but we're not doing that. Of course, the backstabbers and the haters always have to show up. Haters got to show up. Haters show up and say, hey, King, look at these, you know them three guys? They're not doing it. They couldn't wait to see them guys get in trouble. This will teach them. See, this justifies my own decision to submit and bow down and go along with this stupid, absurd lie that this image is something beside a chunk of metal out there. And I've got to do it whenever I hear music. Oh, I hear music. Get down and bow on the ground. So the king drags these three guys, our three boys, in front of him. And he's like, hey, I heard that y'all aren't going along with this. Now, here's your chance. Are you going along with it, or are you not going along with it? And in all due respect, being respectful, our guys are like, yeah, no, we're not doing that. What do you mean? You know, I've made the decree, if you don't go along with it, you'll be thrown into the fiery furnace. And they're like, well, be that as it may, we ain't doing that. I mean, we're just telling you, we're not going to do that. This, of course, throws the king into a rage. As the furnace, I just really am curious what this furnace looked like, because you could obviously look into it. You know, but he got so mad, he had it stoked up higher than what the maximum setting was. It says the guys that drug him up there and pitched him off into it, it was so hot that the guys that did that died from it. Tells you how hot it was. You know, and so our guys still held to their principle. Even as they were being bound, even as they were being drugged, they didn't start begging for their lives. Even as they were marched up there and kicked off into this blazing furnace. Now, one of the things that really strikes me about this is that that's standing with your principles. Again, these guys couldn't be accused of other things. They couldn't be accused of they were refusing to do their jobs. They couldn't be accused of, you know, they were raising, you know, they raised a riotous mob or they were causing work stoppages in the street. I mean, they couldn't be accused of any of this. These guys were going about their business. But when it came to this thing, they said, we're not doing that. That's all it took. People get this in their head like they have to do like, I don't know, rise up and lead an armed rebellion. But a lot of the time, all you got to do is just simply say, yeah, I'm not doing that. I'm not going along with that. Stupid. No, that's a lie. It's just a chunk of metal out there. I'm not going to sit here every time I hear music and flop down on the ground like a moron. But these guys stuck with it. They didn't start saying, no, we'll do it. We'll do it. Please have mercy, King, blah, blah, blah. Didn't beg for their lives. They just went on. All the way to being kicked off into a furnace. Now, this is interesting to me because the average so-called believer now in this country, how many people do you think would do that? How many people do you think would actually stick with it to be kicked into a fiery furnace? Now, you may be sitting there questioning yourself going like, I don't know if I'd have the faith to be kicked off into a fiery furnace. But before you get to that point, ask yourself, what does it take for the average Christian believer? And this, again, flies in the face of the, you know, the general Christian message of today, which is that Christianity is super easy. That's why it's the best religion, because it's super easy. All you got to do is say you accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior and everything's good. And you just show up and sing some songs and talk about being good to other people and how Jesus is love. It's the easiest religion in the world. But of course, it's not. To be a true believer, you got to be willing to be drug off in the fiery furnace because you say, I'm not doing that. That's where you hit the rubber hits the road. You know what I'm saying? I was thinking about what it would take to sit there and to be drugged to the fiery furnace. Because I'm going to tell you right now, and you all already know this, the average so-called Christian believer in this country today, in the West today, they ain't going to risk losing their job. No, straight up, they're not going to risk losing their job without going along, much less going to no fiery furnace. They can sit there and go to church every Sunday, Wednesday, go to twice a day on Sunday, and then on Wednesday, and they can be whatever position in the church and on the board of directors, and I don't give a hell whatever else. But at the end of the day, if somebody says, well, we've got this stupid decree that's an obvious lie, and you've got to go along with it, they're going to go along with it, because otherwise I could hurt my business. It could hurt my income. I could get fired from my job if I don't bow down and go along with the latest absurd demand. I've got to do it. Somebody like that going to go to the fiery furnace? No, they're not even going to go to the fiery unemployment line. Anything that threatens their level of comfortable, you know, their comfort level at any way, shape, or form. Fiery furnace, losing your life. All they got to hear is, you know, they might not be able to go out and eat one day a week. That's enough. Whoa, too much. Christianity is supposed to be the easy religion where all you got to do is say you believe in Jesus. It's funny because you read this story and it lines up with all the way to the last book at the Revelation, you know. Cause everybody to worship the image of the beast. You know, they're not setting up something for everybody. It's about the lie. It's about the absurd lie and the demand that you submit to it. As you bow down and submit and give yourselves over to it. And most people, most self-proclaimed Christian people will do just that. They'll do just that. They might sit there and nod their head and say, yep. But the minute you stand up and say, yeah, I'm not doing that. I'm literally not going to do that because it's stupid. They'll probably, your fellow Christian, most of your church members, most of the people, you know, well, I'm not here at the Parish of the Patriots, hopefully. We have a much finer establishment than that. But, you know, your average fellow congregation at your local church is probably going to unperson you as fast as you can because being associated with you in any way, shape, or form could threaten their livelihood. Heck, there, it's enough that some people they don't even know on the internet might call them names. They might call them and say they're bad people, and they can't have that. It isn't going to affect them in any way, shape, or form. But if they know people out there are saying that they're not good people, that is enough. They will throw your ass under the bus. Going in the fiery furnace, they're not even willing to stick up and say, yeah, no, I agree with this guy. It's stupid. You're saying this, you're saying these people are there, you're accusing them of all of these things, but are they saying anything that's not true? No, 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 you can't say that. The point is, forget, you know, these guys, our three guys here, they had the absolute faith to follow it to the end. They believed, they said that God would deliver them. And they believed that. But you have to also think, and this is just, you know, this is just supposing, you know, just applying some logic here. But you have to also think that in their back of their mind, well, if God doesn't, because the devil always going to ask you, what if he doesn't? You know, you might have faith and say, well, I believe God is going to bring about a way for this. I believe God is going to deliver me from this. But the devil's always going to come around and say, okay, well, that's fine. But what are you going to do if he don't? Then what are you going to do? Because that's how he wheedles in there with causing you to doubt. So, with that in mind, they also had to have had it in the back of my mind. But if for some reason God doesn't deliver, so be it. We'll just die. But we're still not going to go along with this lie. We're still not going to do it. Now, the rest of the story you're probably familiar with. Again, just read it. It doesn't take that long to read it. They were cast in and they were delivered ultimately. And the king was amazed. He couldn't believe what he saw. I think to a certain extent, the king was just, you know, so fed up with all of these different gods and everybody was going on about these gods. And he was probably like, I'm more of a god than these so-called gods because they won't do anything. Everybody's got all these, you know, 500 different gods they're worshiping and I won't ever see them do anything. Here, I made a god out of this image. Now everybody can just, and you made this ludicrous show of it because he's probably kind of really, what do I want to say, jaded over the fact that none of these so-called gods ever actually do anything. But then he witnessed God, the true God, actually did do something. He literally showed up and delivered these guys out of this immense heat, out of this immense flame, and he was just amazed. Finally, a god that did something. And maybe a certain amount of that was his motivation in the first place. I don't know. But at the end of the day, our guys here were ready to go to death because they weren't going to bow down. They were going to submit. They were going to hold on to their dignity. I mean, yes, they were holding on to their faith in the Lord and their belief in the Lord and putting God first while still going about their daily lives beforehand, before all this took place. But they were going to hold on to their dignity. You lose your personhood. You lose who you are. You lose any kind of self-respect when time and again you're forced to submit to an obvious, ludicrous lie. It's absolutely dehumanizing. And our guys said, no, we're not doing that. We're not doing that. And again, it's just amazing. Look, I'm sitting there claiming I could go to the fiery furnace either. I'm not saying that, but it's just amazing when you look around because this flies in the face, and we need to wrap up, but this flies in the face of this Christian, modern Christian church message that Christianity is this easy thing to do. All you have to do is say the words and then sit around and meet up once in a while and talk about how much Jesus loves everybody and you're good to go. And it's absolutely ridiculous because, you know, in principle, you're supposed to be ready to go to the fiery furnace. And again, most people are not going to do that. And it separates, you know, it separates. Basically, the message is that, you know, even when you get into the New Testament is that, you know, not this huge amount of people actually achieve the kingdom of God. They're not actually there. They might give the lip service, but they're not actually there. And on his face, it seems like, well, that's ridiculous. But you understand when you're supposed to demonstrate your faith by your actions, these guys demonstrated their faith by extreme actions of being willing to go all the way to the fiery furnace over it. When most so-called Christians today aren't willing to be called names over it, much less have their businesses or their livelihoods, their jobs threatened. You know, they say, well, I could lose this, I could lose that, I could, my life could become inconvenient, I have a mortgage to make, I've got a car payment to pay, I can't afford all of this. Much less go to the fiery furnace. We're told in the New Testament that our faith is demonstrated. I'll show you my faith by my works. I will show you my faith by my deeds. Faith requires action. Anybody can say, yeah, I believe that, but are you willing to go to the fiery furnace over it? Are you willing to be inconvenienced over it? Are you willing to be shunned in your community because you're saying, yeah, no, I'm not going along with this stupid lie. It's stupid. Y'all are all submitting to a lie. You're worshiping the image of the beast. I'm not going to do that. Are you willing to do those things? Are you willing to put your faith into action? Like I say, anybody can say, yeah, I believe. But action is how you demonstrate that you actually do believe. Again, I do encourage you to read the story because I think it is interesting because, again, it sets an example of how we live because we're living amongst a truly wicked, evil, degenerate land. I mean, we live in a wicked and degenerate and evil land. We live amongst a quote-unquote society that promotes every sort of evil, every sort of wickedness, every sort of lie. And I think these guys give us a really good example of how you conduct yourselves in that and how you hold to your principles and hold to your belief and ultimately hold to the truth. We're going to go ahead and wrap up on that note. Hope you got something out of the show. Really do appreciate it. Again, I appreciate all of you. Do support the show financially. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. This is my last time to pass the offering plate around. Then throw a little something in. It makes a big difference for me. And again, I do appreciate it. We're going to go ahead and get on out of here. And of course, we'll see you next week right here for the Parish of the Patriots.